What's up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome back. This is The Deep Corner, presented by the Volleyball League of America, episode 36. I'm Rob St. Clair, and a very special guest today, all the way from Luxembourg in the middle of Europe. We have Mr. Dan Mennelly. He runs 51VB. Follow him at 51VB on Instagram. The 51 Volleyball Podcast coming out every week. It's by far the best way to follow pro overseas volleyball if you speak English. So give that a check out. And he also, as of recently, is the digital content coordinator for the CEV, the whole governing body of the sport in all of Europe, which is pretty cool. We've got a lot to talk about. Dan and I go way back. I've been on his podcast a couple times. Dan, welcome to the show.
Rob, thanks for having me. Also a big fan of the Deep Corner, so it goes both ways.
Thank you, man. So for anyone here who doesn't listen to your show, they should, because like I said, it's the easiest way by far, in my opinion, to keep up with what's going on in the European leagues and wherever else. Any big news in the volleyball world, you are one of the first people to talk about on your show. So in case anyone doesn't watch it, could you give us like one quick headline from maybe each of the big three European leagues right about now in early December?
Yeah, so like Rob said, the podcast comes out once a week, go over the biggest news, recap a few games that I watched throughout the week. And yeah, just to give a few headlines. So in Italy right now, usually a four-man race, right? Trentino, Modena, Lube, Perugia, the big players for the last few years. But right now, Lube, Perugia kind of like pulling ahead here. Modena lost like an entire Olympic gold medal team worth of players between Zaitsev and Bednorz and all their other guys.
Yeah, they really only have a setter and a libero.
Yeah, which, I mean, they have a great setter and libero.
Yes.
But in Trentino, like, just weird stuff is happening in Trentino because they, you know, they spent tons of money, like millions and millions of euros, buying like some of the best players in the world. And they're in eighth place.
Ouch.
Like 4-7 or 4-8 or something. So not good for them. Although Simone Gianelli back tonight, apparently.
Yes, they were hit maybe the hardest by coronavirus. They had a decent size outbreak that killed, like, or that didn't kill, but like knocked off the wrong players at the wrong times. They just had to play like a whole Champions League weekend without their setter. They put Nimir Abdelaziz back to
that's
setter.
That's my Champions League headline.
Yeah, that was crazy to watch. So yeah, Italy's wild. Who's your like surprise team in Italy right now?
Definitely Vibo Valentia. And for all the American listeners of this podcast, TJ DeFalco.
Yep.
Member of the starting lineup of that team, really developing nicely. I think American fans who don't really follow or watch pro European volleyball will be like pleasantly surprised when they see him back with Team USA. Maybe not challenging Sander Russell for a starting spot, but he'll be in the mix in Tokyo for sure, I think.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that because that, like you and I have talked about a little bit, who's going to be that third and fourth outside on the US Olympic roster, and that there's really no sure answer right now. So if TJ has a really good year, he's got a much better chance to get his foot in the door on that one. So that was really cool. Yeah, and yeah, the Thibaut Rossard, Chinonisi, the couple French guys on that Vibo Valentia team, Enrico Chester, they're legit, and they beat some good teams. It's been fun to watch them. They really came out of nowhere.
Yeah, they've had a couple of losses now to Perugia. So, I mean, I don't think they're a title contender or anything, but it's fun.
Yeah, it's fun. Everyone knows like that equivalent team in several sports. It's just fun to watch. You're probably not going to win it. But
exactly.
How about Poland? What's going on in Poland these days?
I mean, Poland's probably the league that has been the hardest hit by coronavirus. I mean, for like a month or two there, it looked like getting like one game a week maybe.
Yeah.
So many teams were taken out. But Zaxa Kadzierzyn-Kozioł still absolutely killing it, undefeated. Ben Taniuti absolutely orchestrating that team, dishing the ball out to everyone.
The general, man. Equally. He's so good.
Yeah, he's really good.
David Smith for American fans.
David Smith, yeah. And then also for American fans, we still haven't seen Taylor Sander.
So, no, that's a big headline.
Like month 18, 19 of no Taylor Sander, it feels like at this point.
Yeah, that's a very serious concern.
And we're creeping closer to Olympics here, guys.
Like, yeah, man, shoulders are so weird. It sounds like he's at least back practicing with Skrab Elkatov again.
Yeah, he's definitely been practicing on the court, but it's almost more scary that he's been practicing for a month now and still not playing. I mean, maybe it's a good thing that, because he clearly wouldn't have been able to play if Tokyo 2020 happened its original time slot. So
very good point. Yeah, there's no way he could have seen the floor.
Yeah.
So that's been one to follow.
And then Russia, we were just talking about before, like this is like the year to get into the Russian league, because the league's really good. It goes like seven teams deep. Like,
it's legit really teams. Really good. And there's some names, like they only have two foreigners per roster, but there are some big names on the top five, six, seven teams that everyone's going to know.
Exactly. I mean, and even like Russia is so much, they have such good infrastructure. Like the domestic talent is really high. I mean, not enough to fill all 12 teams. Like the bottom three teams are still pretty brutal, but still like a lot of really good players. Like you said, two foreigners would be real nice if Russia could get three foreigners. Oh. Like, can you imagine like what Zenit Kazan could be if they had another foreigner? But I would say the biggest storyline for them right now is Dynamo Moscow, also undefeated. So, you know, a team that I thought I'm pissed they didn't make the Champions League, because they lost to Trentino in the qualifying round and they would have been really fun to watch. But, you know, Laurie Kermanen, the Finnish libero, Sam Daru, and I really like their setter I was talking about on my last podcast, Pavel Pankov, has the team hitting like his outside hitters hitting like 60%+.
Wow. Svetlana Sokolov on that team, right?
Yeah, Svetlana Sokolov as well.
Finally finding like a home in Russia where he can belong at the opposite, not have any weird pin situation like in Kazan last year.
Yeah. Kazan, that experiment is over.
Right. Bartosz Bednarz. Yeah, they did. Bartosz Bednarz having a really good year so far in Kazan for any Polish fans out there.
Yeah, leading the league in aces. And so I guess like the year in Modena last year wasn't a fluke.
Right.
Like he's keeping, which is important for, I mean, but he still probably won't play at the Olympics. I mean,
is outrageous, man. Poland with all those pins. So you make a good point about this is the year to get into the Russian league. That's because it's more accessible than it's ever been. Pretty much all the games are on their YouTube channel for free, and they look really, really nice. They're doing a really good job broadcasting this year, and they've put them out like to the general worldwide public in a way that they never have before. What's going on with that? Is that like a worldwide trend that we're seeing?
I think a lot of clubs see an opportunity here. I mean, it's partly because there's no fans in the arena, so they want to distribute it as much as possible on streaming platforms. And I think people just want to get more eyes on their volleyball games. You know, keeping the games behind a paywall is okay for some games and it's okay for in some situations, but there's always a trade-off in terms of building future fan bases, building new fans, getting new fans, and you know, building your product as a more like internationally competitive product. And you know, it's always a trade-off, because if you can make money, you can charge your $5-$10 whatever per month for your platform, but you're not going to reach as many people. So
right.
I think volleyball in general is still more in a growth phase than in a, you know, time profit to lock down and monetize all our content phase.
Yeah, and we'll get into that a lot more later, because you've been more involved in that directly than ever before. We talked about Champions League really quick, but where you know more about this because you work at the CEV. So you said that earlier, right before we started recording this, that first of all, the competition is still going on, which is great news. Because great news. A lot could have gone wrong, obviously, with pandemic, but the format has changed just a little bit. The competition is still happening. What stage are we at right now? When is the next round? Who are the contenders, in your opinion? Give us a little bit of Champions League.
So basically, instead of each team playing a home and away against each other in their pool, we're basically, it's the same amount of games we're having. It's basically just one big round and then the second big round. So think of it as two big rounds, two tournaments that each club is competing in. So they basically play a four-person round robin, you know, in the first tournament, and then the second tournament, that's it. Which is actually, I think it's a great format for the fans. Honestly, I wouldn't mind. I mean, it's not as good for the clubs because they don't get that home game.
Yeah.
They can, you know, sell for fans, so it probably won't happen. But I think it's been really fun to watch as a fan. Like, you can really get invested in one tournament and, like, follow a few teams really intensely at once, and then back off. Okay. Don't need to worry about those teams for a little bit. But in terms of contenders in Champions League, I mean, I did a power rankings for the CV, which you can check out. I think I had Zenit Kazan at the top of the list. I think, you know, they've been completely dominant the last decade, like one of the most dominant runs in all of sports.
Yeah, really.
For the last decade.
You can't overstate how good they have been for the last 10 years.
And winning Champions League is not easy. It's a lot of games
right
on top of an already intense domestic schedule. Yes, and this is this team. This isn't some weird team with Maxim Mikhailov at outside hitter. This is like Ervin Angapet, Bednar, two of the best outside hitters in the world. Mikhailov back at opposite.
Alexander Buchko, who I love. Big Russian middles.
Artem Volvich in the middle, yeah.
Yeah, they're built for it.
You can't count out Lube Perugia. And I'm going to be honest, before the season started, I thought Trentino was definitely a Champions League threat as well. Maybe the way they've been playing so far, not quite as confident in that. But
well, they survived. Like we said, they survived without their starting setter for a weekend, which is pretty impressive.
But yeah, I would definitely say it's a three-way race between Zenit Kazan, Lube, and Perugia. And then on the women's side, I would say Canaliano, Vakif Bank, that's like the finals. Everyone's already decided it. Like those are the two best teams, which if you watch them, it seems to be the case.
Mm-hmm. When is the next round of Champions League on the men's side? When is like the next little weekend tournament?
We actually have five tournaments next week.
Wow.
Yeah. So one's taking place in Poland, Kadrzyn Kozioł. One is taking place in Berlin, and one's taking place in Tours in France.
Okay.
So those are the three men's tournaments, and I'm not sure off the top of my head where the women's tournaments are, but we have five. So I'm going to be really busy next week.
You're going to be very busy next week.
starting tomorrow, probably. But.
Well, let's talk about what that exactly means for you now. So you are fully employed doing volleyball full time for the CEV, like the governing body of the most volleyball rich area in the world. And you're just like a kid from Canada that loves volleyball. How are you where you are at now? It's such a cool story. The fact that you're doing
this.
Yeah.
So the first non-European that the CEV has ever hired, which is.
Is that true? That's amazing. Yeah.
Which is funny, trying to work out the visa process and everything.
Yeah.
If anyone's ever moved from North America to Europe, it's not a straightforward process, let's say. So basically, you know, I started 5-1 volleyball. I saw there was a big gap in the market. There was a couple people, you know, kind of talking about volleyball. But for me, as a huge NBA fan and a huge sports fan in general, you know, there's a certain way that we're accustomed to media following sports in North America, using a lot of stats, using a lot of analysis, you know, really thinking about the sport and diving into the sport like head first and just like analyzing everything. And I saw that was like absolutely non-existent in volleyball. So I decided to start this blog, YouTube channel, and then the podcast a little bit later. And then I started writing for, I don't know if any listeners remember Volley Mob, which So I think the Volley Mob, someone from Volley Mob contacted me based on a Reddit post, I think. So I started writing for them, and then I saw an advert for externals, like media people for the CEV. And I applied to that, used the Volley Mob as a point on my resume, used my 5-1 volleyball stuff on my point on my resume, and was hired as an external from Canada, which was easier at that point because of the time difference. So I could easily work, you know, the 8:30 start games, because for them it's, or for me now, it's working till midnight or 1 a.m.
Yeah.
When you're in Canada, it's like, you know, by dinner time, you're done.
Right.
So that was great. And then they had a opening a couple of years later at the CV head office, applied and got the job. So now here I am.
Here you are. So your title is digital content coordinator. And So now you have all of that experience trying to break into a part of the sports market in North America, like you were talking about, that didn't really exist for volleyball. And now you have much more resources at your disposal in a region that consumes volleyball a lot differently. So Knowing what you know now, like now that you're doing it for real day to day, getting paid to be a volleyball media guy, what is different? What would you say is different, at least in 2020 versus maybe when you started starting to cover volleyball on the internet? Has there been a bunch that's changed even in the last like 5 years or so?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, it looks like there's a ton more, you know, I would call it smart volleyball content being created, whether it be like yourself, whether it be, you know, out of system with the Worsley brothers. You know, there's Volleyball Explained, which I really like, if you guys haven't heard about that.
It's a good channel.
I mean, exactly. There's I feel like there's a lot more people, realizing, okay, this is possible. And I've also seen it even on the institutional side from the FIVB and from the CV and from some of the national federations that they're using Instagram more. They're on social media. Like you see a couple of the Italian volleyball clubs have like over 100,000 followers on TikTok. Whereas like, I think when I started 5-1 volleyball, like nobody even posted highlights on Instagram. Like I was the only person like posting volleyball highlights
which
on
is
Instagram.
Unthinkable now.
Yeah. That's 3 years ago. And in the 3 years since then, like, you know, there's tons of people doing it. So I think we're on a start of a bit of a wave here, hopefully, in terms of volleyball media. Because even since I've entered the game, so to speak, there's been a lot of improvement, in my opinion.
Yeah, and you alone, 5-1 Volleyball, you have 10,000 followers. And like Everett from Volleyball Source, another Canadian guy who is about to come on the show, also like 5-digit number of followers. Like there is a market for that, and you guys have proved it. And now the governing bodies and the teams are starting to catch up and realize the type of content that get people's attention the most. So in the process of figuring that out, what in your opinion, or like in your experience at the CV, what are your priorities for the content that you're making? Video, stats, podcasts, what are you guys focusing on?
So, I mean, the CV, it's a little different from being like an independent content creator. Like you have a few different stakeholders that you're beholden to. It's not just, okay, let's put content out there and whatever gets the most engagement possible, that's the only thing we're worried about. You also have to like think about how to support clubs, because we also provide a lot of content and stuff for them. You also have to think about, you know, how can we produce content that's within our rights and, you know, do it on a budget as well. Also important things to consider. But I think it's just, you know, mainly showing like how amazing the sport of volleyball is and getting more people watching the games, creating storylines around our competitions, and yeah, just showing the speed and the power, and, you know, getting people to more get associate like with the players a little bit more, because I think there's a few volleyball players that have legitimate crossover star potential. That's eventually, maybe not right now, but there's some good personalities in there.
Totally. Yeah, that's a thing.
Athletic talents.
Yeah, I think that we're so used to in North American sports is like we know the players personally so well. And really all four of the major sports, we just have such a look into their personalities that in volleyball we really don't have. And you're right, there's a ton of potential for that. And I think people want to see that. It's just like, how do we get
look
it to
at
them?
Eric Shoji started his YouTube channel, what, like 2 months ago? And now he has like however many, like triple my subscribers.
Yeah, funny what you can do when you're like the second best libero on the planet. Just like making random little reaction videos. They're so simple, but it's people want that content. Like that proves it right there.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
So when it comes to broadcasting matches, like for whatever league, even if it's like CV Champions League, producing a live broadcast, what are the CV's priorities with that? Because there's a lot of details about a live broadcast that make it good or terrible or really, really fun to watch. There are a lot of little details that go into that. So what for you guys are the biggest things that you think about in a live broadcast?
Well, I mean, so the way our kind of events work is we have two categories. We have just our regular events, and then we have top events, which are Champions League Superfinals, Euro Volley, and Euro Beach Volley.
Okay.
So those three events get way more cameras, way more production value. And that's where we put a lot of the production budget. For the rest of the games, it's a lot of time a matter of who's producing it, kind of the host, who's producing what they're capable of. And to be honest, the priority is just making sure, you know, the stream is stable, available. And yeah, so I would say the biggest sliding scale we use in terms of how we upgrade our quality is the number of cameras. Mm-hmm. So like we'll have a minimum 4 cameras for our lowest events, and then all the way up to 8, 9, 10 cameras for the bigger events. I mean, yeah, I think there's a couple other ways we could upgrade it. maybe we'll talk about that a bit later. Mm-hmm.
So how about this? Now, this is a weird one because you're in Europe, that you govern over the entire European continent, which is so volleyball rich, speaks a million different languages. How do you approach having commentators for your games in the CV? What language are you prioritizing? This is a weird one. Like, and how if you pick, like, I don't know, an English-speaking commentator, are you expecting to lose people's interest? Are you picking Italian commentators for Italian league games? I don't know anything about how this works. How does this work for assigning a broadcaster to do a CV game?
So it's actually not really us who decides that.
Okay.
It's more the rights holders. Like if Russian TV buys our Russian league matches, then they have their own commentators. If when Polstat buys our Polish league matches, they have their own commentary team. So it really comes down to the broadcaster rather than us. And even then, it's if our media rights partner would assign the broadcast or assign the commentator. Not like it's almost never us.
Okay.
Yeah, but I would say unfortunately for our competitions, we don't have. I think the only market where we haven't sold the rights is the UK in terms of English speaking markets. So to have to pay for an English commentator when that's the only market we really would be serving is
no point.
Sense.
Hey, well, if you need a volunteer who can sit in Chicago and do it remotely, you know who to call. So this doesn't really apply during the pandemic, obviously, because there almost nowhere in the world are there fans at games. But let's fast forward to whenever the world's back to normal. What does the CEV do in particular, if anything, to work on putting butts in seats at games? Do you have any influence over trying to market to get fans sitting in the arenas at games, or is that more on the clubs or the leagues?
It's mostly on the clubs, leagues, whoever's hosting. So if a tournament's happening in Germany, then a lot of times the German National Federation, Volleyball Federation would do a lot of the work, but we do support them. It's not, my role is more supporting online.
Yeah.
So doing like, you know, paid marketing campaigns on social media or doing organic, you know, reach with our kind of content as well, content creation that we hope will reach fans, sell tickets. But yeah, it's a lot of advertising, you know, banners, traditional, you know, radio advertisements, that kind of thing, TV commercials. Nothing probably you haven't heard of before.
Yeah. Man, I've just the dream of even having that in North America for volleyball is just insane. So you've loved volleyball forever. What can you just give your stamp on or your take on what it is like to watch volleyball in person? And because I've talked about this a million times with people on this show before, how much of a difference does it make to you to see the speed of the game, the size of the players, the athleticism in real life up close? Like, how much more fun is it than even watching a good quality stream online?
Oh, it's you can't even compare it. And I mean, I do think there's ways we can improve the way we broadcast the sport to make it a little closer to how it feels in person. But even then, like I think it's one of the big, I would say basketball is a lot like this too, where it's just a completely different sport in person.
Totally.
Just the speed of the game is in the power. I remember sitting at Eurovolley watching, I think, the German and Dutch national teams do hitting lines. And when you're watching on TV, you know, it looks pretty cool, but when you're in the arena, you realize how crazy hard they're hitting the ball, even in hitting lines. Like, where the press row is at the end of the back of the court, and after they bounce it and you catch the ball, like, you can barely catch it. Like, it's still, even after a bounce, it still has an insane amount of potential energy. And yeah, and I've been lucky enough to see, like, even I've only been to a couple of competitions, but to see like the beach volleyball Vikings play, like,
those
right
dudes
up
are
close.
Crazy.
I've seen, you know, the Polish national team play up close. I've seen Irvin Engapet. I was on the court for the Eurovolley finals and semifinals. So yeah, I've had some cool experiences, and like, it's a completely different game in person.
Yeah. I've had the same, even just as a fan without like media credentials or whatever, but the U.S. men's national team likes to play VNL in or around Chicagoland a lot when those tournaments
are
happening.
Well, we were both at the
you and I were both at VNL finals when it was here in Chicago, like, I guess now two summers ago, year and a half ago. That, man, especially when the guys are like peaking at the finals of that tournament, seeing that in real life is just, it blows your mind, even as someone who loves volleyball and watches all the time. That was like a live viewing experience like I've never even had before, because the teams were playing at a level that I hadn't seen in real life before. And even that made a difference for me. It is crazy how good those guys are, how big they are, how fast they are, how fast everything moves. And like, it's impossible to get a feel for like how tall Matt Anderson is in real life. unless you're like sitting in the first five rows and you see him walk by like 15 feet away from you and how he's like effortlessly putting his forehead at the top of the antenna. Like, it's absurd seeing it in real life. It's so much fun. It's what I wish everybody knew how cool it was.
Yeah. And even like, I've been lucky enough to watch a lot of like college volleyball as well. And like the high level pros is completely different level.
Oh
like,
yeah.
It's like watching high school versus college. It's maybe an even bigger jump to college versus pro. So again, like you said, there's one opportunity maybe right now, I guess, with VNL to watch that kind of volleyball in North America.
Well, hopefully we're the league I'm working for is trying to put out more chances. Exactly. We're gonna put it in front of kids when they're already at a junior event playing and it's just right next to them. They don't even have to go anywhere and they're gonna see it. So that is a huge part of our plan. So I want to talk plenty about that. First, I want to take a little break to have a funny, like, hypothetical question. If you could pick, let's say you have an infinite budget, you could pick the best seven volleyball players in the world right now to make a starting seven of each, like, standard position. Who would it be for you? Any country, any player?
Micah Christensen, Wilfredo Leon, Irvin Enkepet, Streko Lisanac, Robert Landy-Simon, Jenny Grubenikov. And I forgot the opposite. Namir Abdelaziz.
Ooh, okay. So
I've talked about this a lot on my podcast recently. Number one opposite right now, in my opinion, Namir.
That is crazy. So who is that guy for people who don't know who he is and about a little bit about his story?
So Dutch volleyball player, played a lot of setter, growing up at a pretty high level too.
Yeah.
You know, played for the Dutch national team and a couple French clubs. And was he setter or opposite when he played on Zaxa? Do you remember?
He was a setter. He was a
setter, yeah. So like playing a setter on the highest level and then decided to switch to opposite. And then was like leading the league, Italian league, in scoring every year as an opposite. And now got a huge payday with Trentino. And
he's not that old either. He's like, what, 29 or 30?
He's still got years left.
I just felt like I had been hearing his name forever because I just remember him as being that one Dutch setter who jumps really high. Now he's...
He jumps really high. Maybe he should play opposite.
Yeah, sure enough. The dude has a crazy arm. He's, you know, the stat lines better than I do, but he's up towards the top of Italy in hitting percentage, total points, aces, the whole nine yards. He's having a heck of a year. Wilfredo Leon, like you said, is a no-brainer. Is he the best player in the world, in your opinion?
Oh, yeah, easily.
Yeah, I don't think anyone is going to argue that.
You know, I think he's like developed a lot recently. I've been watching a lot of Perugia games this year. He has his float serve passing has improved a lot, his platform passing. Also, his tip game was super awkward when Vital Hanen tried to force him to do it like 2 years ago. Like, it was a joke how bad he was at tipping because he never needed to.
No, why would he?
Now he's got a little bit of finesse, which I like.
That's terrifying. Well, now in Perugia, he even more so than previous years, he's taken most of the high pressure swings for that team.
Yeah, well, I mean, they had Luciano DiCecco in the past too. Basically any ball he could set to anywhere.
Right.
Whereas now Dragon Trevigo a little more limited, so has to go to the outlets a bit more, which is a lot of the time is going to be Wilfredo Leon.
Not a bad outlet to have. Your second outside hitter choice is really interesting. You picked Irvin Enkepet. I think there's a lot of ways that you could choose to pick that L2 spot because like Wilfredo Leon's a no-brainer. But there's a lot of styles of outside hitter that exist in the world. The complementary aspect and like what you bring to a starting seven has a lot to do with how you would pick that spot. So explain your Irvin Enkepet choice because I think it's a good one.
So I actually like him because I think he fits really well next to Wilfredo Leon. I think Irvin Enkepet is like I think a lot of people see him as like the ultimate star offensive option, like gonna score 6 points per set. No, he's just like the best at everything else. Like he's an incredible jump server. He has beautiful second hands. He's an incredible passer. Easily the best defender in position six.
Definitely the best middle back defender in the world, for sure. Exactly. It's such an underrated part of his game.
And, I mean, he's a great attacker. He's a flashy attacker. He has a lot of tools at his disposal. But he's not hitting at 12 feet every time. Like he does get limited attacking sometimes. But I think he's the perfect complement next to Wilfredo Leon. I think you need someone like that who can do all the little things that maybe Leon, you just leave him to hit and serve.
Yeah.
And Enkepet will do something else.
Yeah, that's a really good pick. Your setter libero happened to be that Modena duo that we talked about. Micah Christensen from the U.S., Jenny Grebennikov from France. Grebennikov is obviously a no-brainer. Setter is a much more interesting discussion that we could have for hours and hours if we wanted to. That is a good choice. What is going on with them in Modena right now? It's kind of proof that a setter and a libero can't make a team.
Yeah, I mean, but we already knew that.
Like, yeah, we already knew that.
I don't think anyone's saying like a really top tier setter is going to carry. They can't carry anyone.
No, it's impossible.
That's why it's. I mean, the setter position is the most important, but also, yeah, having your best players in opposite or outside hitter is probably better for a floor raising team, I guess.
I think that's what's cool about the sport of volleyball is you can't carry a team. In almost any case, you can't carry a team on the back of one player. Even Wilfredo Leon couldn't quite carry some teams without a little bit of support.
It's an interesting thought experiment. What's the worst team that Wilfredo Leon could be on and still make like the Italian League playoffs?
Yeah, that might be a whole podcast episode in and of itself. Your middle choices, Francesco Lisanach, Robert Landy-Simone, are really good choices.
Middle two, there's a lot of ways you could go.
Yeah.
I think Robert Landy-Simon, I mean, I think he's having one of the best years of his career.
He's so good this year. Him and DiCecco together are unfair. It's an absolute cheat
Back code. Together. The band is back
Finally,
together.
Back from the Piacenza days.
Yeah.
Those two are great.
I just watched him serve like six aces in a row.
Yeah, that match like, the other night.
Oh, man. Yeah, he's dangerous. But you could also go like Lucas Satkamp. Could go Mazursky.
Mm-hmm. Both of them a little bit past their primes. I think the two that you chose are good choices. All right, let's move on to some more like volley media stuff. So we talked a little bit about the segment that you wedged yourself in North America. The North American sports market is insane. It's so dense. There's so much there. There's the big four professional sports that dominate the U.S. and three of those.
MLS gaining ground every year.
MLS is gaining ground every year. People want soccer more and more and more.
Golf, tennis.
I'm a big golf fan for sure. People want three of those big four have Canadian teams. Hockey, obviously a tremendously big deal in Canada. Is there even a market for volleyball in North America? I guess that's the first place to start. Like, is there even a point in a league like the VLA trying to do what it's doing? Like, do people even want to see professional volleyball?
It's a question we've been asking ourselves. Every volleyball media person asks themselves all the time, like every day. And I mean, personally, I think for sure there is. I mean, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing, I don't think, if I didn't think there was a market potential. I mean, volleyball is like a big business. Do you know how many club fees are spent on volleyball every year? How many scholarships are given out? How many Adidas and Mizuno shoes are bought every year? Do you know how many gym space is rented out every year? There's a lot of people playing volleyball and a lot of people spending money on volleyball. But yeah, like it hasn't translated to any type of serious, really professional league yet, or a lot of eyeballs. Even except for the Olympics, Americans don't really watch volleyball.
Yeah, if you don't have
maybe some NCAA women's, but
yeah, that actually is pretty big every December or whatever. If you don't like grow up playing the game, if you don't have a kid who plays the game, whatever. If you're not a seasoned volleyball person, volleyball is never like put in front of you and you're never going to go out of your way to watch it because just nobody knows. And I think that's the biggest task that we have in volleyball media is to put it in front of people and for people to figure out why it's so cool, because it is. And we know that it is.
I think there's been, I don't know if this is a good time to talk about it, but I think there's been some like really good developments on that end recently with how like crazy popular is volleyball is on Instagram and TikTok. Like, it's unbelievable, like the amount of people that are into volleyball, especially like Gen Z, all about volleyball. Like,
yeah,
we can talk. We don't have to talk about this a lot, but like Haikyuu has been like maybe the biggest volleyball crossover thing since Top Gun. Like,
dude, that's an interesting one, and I go back and forth on that a lot because I get annoyed by the comments section on every single volleyball related YouTube video just being exclusively like Haikyuu references.
Oh, I am pro Haikyuu to the. I haven't watched it.
Me neither. But it has brought so many eyes to the sport of volleyball, the real life sport of volleyball that wouldn't have otherwise been there, and that is never ever a bad thing. You can never argue against that.
No. Anytime volleyball is in popular media, even if it's anime, which is nothing wrong with that, I think it's like amazing for the sport. And I really hope that it's not just a flash in the pan, and like these people that are, you know, posting these stupid YouTube comments, you know, 5 years down the line, they're competing in rec tournaments and buying subscriptions to Eurovolley TV.
Right? Yeah, like, or they're like following Trentino or Modena or their national team or whatever. Yeah, that is, that's what we want. That's breaking into a viewership segment that wouldn't have otherwise been there for the game of volleyball, which is a huge deal. So in North America in particular, you and I both have a little bit of experience with this by now. How do we break into that market? How do we get volleyball in front of people who already have so many sports to consume all around them that have a lot more money and a lot more content and a lot more, you know, infrastructure than we do? How do we put volleyball in front of people in North America?
Well, I think, like you said, yeah, it's getting people to watch games in person and seeing, you know, how crazy fun the game is and how fast it is at the highest level, which you can do by getting them in an arena like the VLA is doing and going to youth events and things like that. Or, you know, shooting a 60 frames per second TikTok video of Lubitsch Ivanova hitting lines, right? Like, it's both kind of the same thing. It's showing the power, speed, and size of the sport. So, and I think we have to be patient too. I think that's a huge part of it, because you see, I mean, I don't want to tear down other sports, but there is declining participation levels in some big North American sports, like football, for example.
Oh,
right?
Big time. Yeah, the
youth time declining. And I think we're going to see the same thing across other sports, as, you know, player safety and concussions, and that becomes an even bigger deal as parents take, because volleyball, you know, unless dodgeball becomes super popular, it's the only real team non-contact sport, right?
Yeah, unless you really want to count baseball, which is hardly a team sport, to be honest. It's just so different. But yeah, you talked already a little bit about the youth numbers for volleyball in North America. I wish I had like number figures in front of me. The number of juniors, especially girls in the U.S. that are playing volleyball is an all-time high, and numbers that are just insane. And that right there is already proof of demand of the sport of volleyball. People are buying, yeah, knee pads and shoes and volleyballs and gym space and paying club fees and traveling on weekends when the pandemic is over to play and, you know, qualifiers and go to nationals and all that stuff. There's so many people that are playing. And then in women's NCAA, there's like four divisions, and then the NAIA and all of U Sports in Canada, there's thousands and thousands of college volleyball players there too. So it's weird that it's never translated to the professional level, but it's not like there aren't volleyball like thirsty eyeballs.
Exactly, right.
Like there are people there that like volleyball, that if you put it in front of them, they will consume it. No,
for me, I do truly believe it's just a matter of time before, like, I think it's going to be a really uphill battle until you hit the threshold where top American and Canadian players are staying in North America to play.
That will be a huge deal somewhere down the road. It will take a long time to get to that point.
It's a really, really uphill climb to get to that point, because, you know, there's a huge advantage for Europe right now in terms of how organized it is, how much they were paying players, you know, how much exposure they get in the competitiveness, but. No, I think it is a goal, a realistic goal.
Definitely a goal. It's definitely a goal of ours at the VLA. And once you get one or two big name players to actually stay home and make it their career, everyone else is going to follow. It's why all the other leagues in the U.S. have been the best in the world in their respective sports for so long, is everybody in the world at the top of their games wants to come to the U.S. to play sports if the money is right. And if you get the talent, the money will become right pretty quickly. Yeah. It's a kind of a problem that solves itself once you get the people, once you like fight the uphill battle, you know?
And I mean, we can see the end game, because Poland right now is the end game. Like, volleyball is like insane in Poland. Like, it's on primetime TV all the time. Random people on the street know all the players. Like, everyone has their favorite team. There's Polish gear everywhere of the clubs. Like, that's the end game. They have big TV deals. They have top production on every single matches, even on the bad teams. They have real professional like commentators in suits doing halftime shows, and they have the whole deal. Like, we can already see a real world example of what it looks like.
Yep, it's there. It's by far the biggest sport in Poland. It's bigger than soccer. It's bigger than anything else. The way that their fans consume volleyball is incredible to me. All I want to do in my life once is go to like a a Zaxa or a Skra home game.
No, I need to go there.
Yeah, with like 60,000 people sitting in there, like going insane, knowing everything that's going on. It's amazing. I've been to a handful of Polish games in the U.S. where I, as an American fan, am outnumbered 50-1. Because it's insane. Everyone in Poland just craves volleyball. They love it. They've figured it out. They figured out how cool it is. They worship their national team players. It's amazing the culture of volleyball that they built there. You're right. It's been done. It exists in the world.
There's nothing inherently wrong with volleyball that it can't happen in other places.
Yeah, it's obviously happened. They just, I don't know, they broke into the market that was there and everybody got on board.
Yeah, and I mean, big success at the national team level, which is what I think spurred a lot of the growth in Italy in the 90s and some of the development in the Netherlands. But it's tough to break into a market that doesn't have, like, has as much saturation as the U.S.
As you said. Like, that's true.
People only have so much time in their lives for
to consume, to, sports. To be a sports fan, yeah. So, we talked a little bit about the CEV's strategy for digital content and production and all the stuff that's going on right now, especially in a pandemic year. But let's say you were in charge of the VLA's digital content. Let's say you were in charge of promoting a North American professional league. How would you approach that similarly and differently to the way the CEV is doing it, just because it's in North America?
So, I mean, part of my advantage, I would say, at the CV is that I bring like kind of a North American perspective to the European market, I guess, which I think has helped out a lot. But I would say for the VLA, I mean, there's so much, you have so much flexibility and freedom, right? Like there's a certain way the CV has to do their broadcast. There's certain ways we have to fulfill obligations to all our different stakeholders. But I don't know everything about the VLA, but you know, you could, if you want to change the way you broadcast a game, try something out, you know, shoot from the baseline one game. You know, okay, this weekend we're going to shoot, we have this new camera, we're going to shoot in 120 frames per second, or we're going to, you know, do all this kind of cool stuff. You can go do it, I imagine.
Yeah.
Like, I think there's a lot of ways you can play around with the broadcasting, because I think there's so much potential in volleyball that's just unexplored. We've kind of shot volleyball in the same way, same angle, in the same, you know, the same cuts, everything since the 60s, 70s when we started having it on TV.
Yeah, the baseline one is a good point. That's by far my favorite angle to view volleyball from. When, like, people, I assume you know what data volley is. It's like at least the American system for keeping stats. When people do data volley,
we use it too.
Yeah, they insist on sitting on the baseline. I prefer to commentate from the baseline. The event,
I always watch from the baseline as well.
Yeah, the event that we ran in July was all filmed from the baseline. I think it's a more fun way to watch the game. The only drawback is sometimes it's hard to see what's going on the far side of the court. If you just put the camera up.
I think there's still, but that's what I mean, VLA, you can play around with it. Okay, yep. Like maybe be like, oh, like 38 degrees, like, is the best like angle to view volleyball. We don't know that, right? Because nobody's like actually thought about it that much.
Yeah.
So I would say, you know, I wouldn't try and be the same product as European volleyball, except North American. I would try just to be like, okay, this is the way we're going to do volleyball, and it's going to be different from how Europe and how Asia consumes volleyball, but we think this is the way forward.
So yeah, that's kind of an answer to my next question that I had before we get you out of here. If you could see one thing, what do you personally want to see the VLA do this season? Because we do have a season. It's starting in January. We're going to have a show about that very, very soon to get all the details out there. But there is more volleyball coming. So what's something that you, other than playing around with camera angles, which is a great idea, what's something you want to see us do?
50 frames per second, all your matches.
Okay. That's simple.
You know, also, I think it would makes a big difference in terms of, especially volleyball. I mean, you know, if I'm watching hockey, I can't watch it in 25 frames per second.
No, you can't. It's impossible.
It's like a slideshow, but we still have all our volleyball in 25 frames per second. So being able to differentiate yourself that way, I think, would be a huge improvement right off the bat.
Yeah, and that's a big one that like nobody really gets until they see it, or until they see like the two side by side.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I'm not sure what your stats keeping or the stats are planning on being, but, you know, I think detailed and advanced statistical measurements, at least, maybe this is more of a me thing, but I think that's also something we're missing a bit in volleyball.
I agree. I would love yeah, having a data volley person like sit next to me as I commentate, feeding me stuff, like to even say the matches and like to post graphics of after the fact is a huge deal. And that's something that we are working on, I promise.
And I would say, you know, the commentary, but you guys already have that covered. So
yay.
good English commentary that actually knows the backgrounds of the players and, you know, is able to break down and analyze the match, which it's good. It's good that you guys have that.
Thank you. I don't know where, if I were just a fan, not just a commentator, if I were watching, if there were either no commentary or bad commentary, they would lose me as a fan pretty quick. That is for sure.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'll even watch, I watch games with Italian commentary or Polish commentary on.
Me too.
Yeah. Cause it's just nice to have, like, you just, it feels like you have like the excitement a little bit
yeah,
more.
Yeah, it's something.
Especially without fans right now.
Right. The only thing I could pick out is players' names, but excitement levels translate across all languages. And I do that when I commentate too. Like, I assume that people at least know what's going on with volleyball, but even if they don't, my excitement level about a play can tell people a lot, even if they don't understand the words I'm saying.
It's huge for the post-production content as well, like post-match content, like when you're clipping highlights and doing all that. Like, I think people don't realize how big of a part commentary is of that as well.
Couldn't agree more. Every great like highlight play you've ever seen across any sport has like an iconic commentary moment attached to it. And if that is lame, then the play just isn't as good as maybe the play actually is. It makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
All right, dude, that's a lot of stuff. That's a lot of volleyball that we just talked about for the people. I hope everyone enjoyed that. I think you and I have a match to go watch, right? We're gonna go watch some Italian league.
Oh, I mean, Saturday night we have games, Friday, Saturday, Sunday right now with all the COVID mixed up stuff. So it's like, I mean, it's perfect because we're in lockdown right now. I can't go to like the bar or something on a Saturday night. So might as well stay in and watch volleyball.
What else is there to do but watch volley? Dan, thanks so much for joining me, man. This is a blast. I'm excited for your fans to listen to this show, for our fans to listen to your show. Everybody, please go follow at 51VB on Instagram. Listen to the podcast. It's
YouTube too. YouTube channel.
Yeah, your YouTube channel.
It's not as alive right now as my other platforms, but I might have a video coming very soon.
Subscribe to it. I'll put that in the description on our YouTube channel. I'll make sure everyone can find your stuff as easily as possible.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for having me, Rob. This is really fun. I always love talking volley.
Of course. Love it, dude.
I mean, that's what I do all the time every day, so.
Yeah, hey, a couple North American volleyball media people under the age of 30. We're a rare breed these days.
Exactly. Me, you, and
that's pretty much it.
But your next guest as well.
That's right. Yeah, I look forward to that. I'm actually recording with him later today, so a lot of,
don't spoil who it is.
Yeah, a lot of north of the border action coming on the Deep Corner here pretty soon. Thanks everyone for watching. We'll see you next time very soon. Go follow Dan, go follow 5-1, all their stuff. We will see you next time.